Morning.
Good to be back with you today.
I've enjoyed the meetings here and learned a lot. And I heard a lot of things that go well with the topic of maintaining discipline. There are a lot of things that contributed to what we need to learn about this. And in a lot of ways, this is a kind of a tough topic for me to discuss, and I feel like I have to begin with an apology. Because as I spent the last couple days, thinking about the students that have gone through, excuse me, they've gone through my classrooms, and the variety of needs they represented, the variety of situations they came from, the ones that succeeded and the ones that didn't. I wonder how many times I got this wrong. I wonder how many times God gave me a bruised reed and I broke it. I wonder how many times God sent me a wounded spirit and I crushed it. I wonder how many times God sent me a tough guy with a hard shell and I let him leave my classroom without ever reaching his heart. So, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to my students, to my family, to those that know me. I'm sorry for my failures in the area of discipline and getting it right. All right, I think there's something that we need to discuss just a little bit, maybe before we talk too much about our classrooms. We need to go just back just a little bit. And we need to think about our own lives and our own relationships to authority. You know, we come from a lot of different homes, a lot of different settings, a lot of different backgrounds, and you each have your own experiences. And I want to ask some of these questions without you feeling like this talk is about prying into your personal life, but I feel like you need to ask yourself some of these things. You know, you may have grown up under strict discipline in your home. You may have grown up under a father that yelled at you when you made mistakes, that criticized you. You may have grown up without ever hearing a positive word that you can remember. You may have grown up with you may have gone to school with a teacher that was unfair, maybe even a teacher that spanked you unfairly. Or you may have been one of those boys of bygone years whose teacher didn't figure that the whipping was done until the boy cried. And at 14, you may have been hard to make cry. And you may have gone home with bruises from your knees to almost to your shoulders. I know people like that. Those scars last, the inside scars last long after the outside ones do. Something's wrong. Maybe somebody in authority hurt you or abused you or misused you or just criticized you and ran you down and put you down and verbally kept you there. Those, I think that we have to look at that and recognize it for what it is. Whether it's ignorance or wrongdoing or sin or evil, we'll have to call it what it is. And then you'll have to, if you need to, get help to deal with it. Get somebody to pray with you. Get somebody to talk to you about it. But you have to forgive. You'll have to forgive. You and I have to forgive. Because we can't go on in life with a broken relationship to authority, where somehow our relationship ultimately to Christ's authority in our life and to people that God puts in authority in our lives is broken, is wrong. We need to be able to forgive and learn and heal if we're going to step into the classroom and represent God's authority to young lives there and be in our place. Now, brothers, if you feel like there's something that needs to be said with that, please say it. If you feel like I don't have that expressed properly, help me express it. If you feel like I'm wrong, correct me. I would like to just look briefly at a passage of Scripture in Acts 19. Hardly have to read this. You know the story. Now, Paul was casting out demons. That was a very authoritative ministry. There were seven sons of this exorcist who saw the effectiveness of Paul's pattern and ministry and attempted to implement it for themselves. Verse 13, then certain of the vagabond Jews exorcists took upon them to call over them which had evil spirits the name of the Lord Jesus, saying, "We adjure you by Jesus whom Paul preacheth." And we know the result. They told the demon, leave him, get out of him, in the name of Jesus, the Jesus that Paul preaches. And the demon said, "Well, I know Christ, and I know Paul, I don't know you." And he says he sent them out of there naked and bleeding, tore them up, beat them up, and they ran out. Well, the problem is that these men were not under the authority of Jesus Christ. They were not under Paul's authority. They had simply seen a pattern that looked like a good pattern and decided to apply it in this situation with none of the connections in place. I'm afraid that if we just grab a pattern that we hear about here, we hear some good ideas and we say, "I'm going to take this back to my classroom. Yeah, I'm going to do it like this." And we still have relationship problems with our parents, or with our church, or with our school board that we're not willing to deal with. We're not going to be any more effective than they were. And we'll probably end up leaving, at least feeling kind of naked and bleeding, feeling kind of beat up by it. So, I think that comes first and foremost and gives us a good place to start in our own lives, in relating to authority, and in exercising that in our classrooms. Now, what I'm going to talk about here, there are principles, and don't violate the principles. The principles are true. The principles stand fast. We cannot move outside of that. I also have just ideas and situations that I can tell you about that I dealt with, and those are just my own experience in the situation in which I found myself. Those are just ideas that I have had over the years, and that's all they are. And they might not work for you, but the principles are true. And the first one, I think, is the principle of authority. Now, I'm going to write a word on the board. Communication. And every time this comes up this morning, you'd be welcome to just raise your hand every time you hear this. That'd be fine. And you may spot some times I didn't even think of. I think this is maybe one of the single most important things that we're going to work with in their discipline, our classrooms. Let's just really quickly think about how the situation works. We have a student. Okay, at the very start, we're going to have to very simply and clearly communicate to him an expectation. Son, when the bell rings, come in and take your seat. Or, please stay in your seat until break time. Or, raise your hand if you need to get out of your seat. We have to communicate an expectation clearly, the way he understands. And if we don't, we have no basis to punish him for something that he isn't even aware he was supposed to be doing. Sometimes we just communicate poorly right on the outset. We don't express it to them either in a way that they understand that this is what they're supposed to be doing. We just kind of give it as a suggestion, or, I wish you guys would, I wish you guys would kind of more do like this. And they're not sure if we really meant it. Sometimes we're kind of timid about just clearly expressing what we want everybody to be doing. That's really important. Okay. This is something else to get. Students have to succeed if they will progress. Okay? So you can communicate to them that they didn't quite do well enough. You forgot. You got out of your seat. Okay, but try to remember. But at some point, you will have to communicate to them that they succeeded, that they met that expectation, that they got an A. You'll have to communicate that to them, or they will decide that they fail, that is their role. They're the failure. They're the bad guy. They will never live up to your expectations. There is no hope of ever getting there. And then you will have, your discipline will have pushed them the other way, and they'll become your enemy. Oh, now you made your time in the classroom a lot harder. So somewhere in there, you'll have to say that, today went so much better. You remembered almost every time to raise your hand. You stayed in your seat almost all the time until break. That was great. And tomorrow will probably be even better. Love it. Okay. So he can go home feeling like, hey, I made some progress. And you say, but it wasn't good enough for me. Okay, well, I'm sorry. You're going to have to choose between the best he can do or something worse. So what you have coming from him if you don't accept that. Because what he needs is your acceptance. I think this is an important part of discipline. Now, there are any number of different styles and methods of discipline, but I'm going to just read a page or so from a book that you probably know. Laura Ingalls Wilder, These Happy Golden Years. You probably know the page I'm turning to. Managing. Because in the story, Laura was teaching school and had some real problems in her classroom. She told them all about that miserable week at school. "What can I do?" she asked. "I must do something. I can't fail, but I am failing. If only I were big enough to whip Clarence. That's what he needs, but I can't." "You might ask Mr. Brewster to," Carrie suggested. "He could make Clarence behave himself." "Oh, but Carrie," Laurie protested, "how can I tell the school board that I can't manage the school? No, I can't do that." "There you have it, Laura," Pa said. "It's all in that word manage. You might not get far with Clarence, even if you were big enough to punish him as he deserves. Brute force can't do much. Everybody's born free, you know, like it says in the Declaration of Independence. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. And good or bad, nobody but Clarence can ever boss Clarence. You better just manage." "Yes, I know, Pa," Laura said, "but how?" "Well, first of all, be patient. Try to see things his way as far as you can. Better not try to make him do anything because you can't. He doesn't sound to me like a really vicious boy." "No, he isn't," Laura agreed, "but I guess I just don't know how to manage him." "If I were you," Ma gently began, and Laura remembered that Ma had been a school teacher, "I'd give way to Clarence and not pay any attention to him. It's attention he wants. That's why he cuts up. Be pleasant and nice to him, but put all your attention on the others and straighten them out. Clarence will come around." "That's right, Laura. Listen to your Ma," said Pa. "Wise as a serpent and gentle as a dove." "Charles," said Ma. Okay. It was good advice that her parents gave her. And it's good that she found somebody to talk to. Now, her situation and running a town school and wanting to come out with a good job recommendation to take and hopefully get another teaching position, and her reluctance to talk to the school board hopefully isn't a situation that you guys face. I hope that all your school boards want to hear from you, want you to communicate with them, want you to tell them what's going on, and want to help you. And that should be a resource for you. I think he's raising his hand because we said communication again. Yeah. So that's good. That's what we need. So that was good advice. And I think no matter what kind of school setting you find yourself in, we need to be thinking about how to manage it. And manage definitely implies elements of control, implies communication, but it doesn't mean only control. It doesn't mean only force. Okay, so let's look at a couple different possibilities here. So you maybe a little intensive and micromanaging. You want all your students to come in on time, quietly, sit down facing forward with their feet under the desk, always do their work neatly, always turn the homework in on time, always raise their hand, always say, "Mr. Dan." Why couldn't they just get that right? Surely that's not too much to ask from students. Well, no, and all, as a school board, all we want is just a teacher who achieves a perfect classroom while never ruffling anyone's feathers, least of all his or her own, gets all the students through all their books with top grades while they all have fun all the time and never get overloaded with homework, who never pushes a student too far, never sends anyone home in tears, never has a cross word for anyone, right? So we all really want the same thing. Maybe if you really feel that way about your students, you should go work in a bakery and sprinkle the little colored candies on top of the donuts And you could practice perfection there, and every time you got every time one didn't quite turn out right, you could just eat it. Okay, so I think we're at the place where both as school boards and as teachers, we're going to be stuck with managing people with all their problems, all their foibles, all their shortcomings, all their histories, and trying to get the best out of everybody. Now, maybe your management style is laissez-faire, you just let things take their course. You know, you figure everybody will kind of come around eventually. The main thing is at the end of the year you want everybody to like you and say, well, you know, that was really a fun year. And you don't have a lot of hard objectives. But then I would remind you that you have a job to do and you're responsible. You have things that you're supposed to accomplish and you need to get your team safely there. If you get to the end of the year and everybody had fun and everybody's still alive and well, but you didn't accomplish anything, imagine how that would work in the real world. Yeah, you're the foreman, your construction crew comes back at the end of the day and the boss says, oh, how did it go? Everybody's like, hey, we just had a blast, you know? It was great. we took a break and then we had lunch and then we had a nap. You know, we all had a wonderful time, and there were no injuries. So, you know, we have pretty much a perfect record. We didn't really get very far on the job. So, you have objectives that you have to accomplish, and you have to figure out how to get them there. Managing children is a lot more like training horses, and I don't have a lot of experience with it, but one of my sons does train horses some, and I've watched some other people, and I'm very impressed with it. Each horse is different. They do them one at a time. It's not a mechanical process like building furniture or making donuts. It involves communication, relationship, and understanding both ways, and the results are incredible. The results are a man and a horse that seem to talk to each other and seem to understand each other very well and work together. If you've watched that, and some of you have, it's very impressive. And maybe some of you have done that yourselves. And my compliments. I'm going to read a verse, John Chapter 1, verse 17. I consider this maybe the most important verse in the Bible about classroom discipline. For the law was given by Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. The law came by Moses, but grace and truth came by Jesus Christ. Now, you need both in your classroom. As Christ's ambassador, bring grace and truth to your classroom. That means you will have a rule. This is the rule. This is the truth. And if you violate it, you broke the rule, and that's also the truth. But where's the grace? The grace is, hey, why did this happen? What can we do so that next time you don't have this problem? Two boys, boy comes in, Conrad, hit me. I'm sorry, are you okay? No broken bones, no blood. But he hit you. Why'd he hit you? I don't know, he's always picking on me. Okay, so we have to talk to Conrad. Conrad, what's going on? You hit him. He came in here almost crying. Well, he called me turkey lips. Again! I had enough! Okay, so definitely this problem is going a little deeper. Why'd you call him turkey lips? Anyway, you know how it goes. And sometimes you can't. find the initial incident. But with my students, I would have done something like this. I would have said, okay, Connor, you crossed the line when you used your fist. So I'll have to take care of you separately. So I'll talk to you in a minute, because mockery, ugly words are wrong, but there is a line when I no longer control myself and I punch somebody or I physically hurt them. So, you know, I'll talk to you in a minute and I'll tell you what we're going to do with you. But we're still going to have to address the mockery. We're still going to have to address the teasing. But we're also going to have to go one step further and say, okay, Conrad, okay, we're going to have to punish you for hitting him. But, you know, this isn't the last time in your life you're going to face this. You're going to have people call you ugly things. Well, if your experience is anything like mine, probably all your life. So, and if you hit them all, you know, you're going to spend a lot of your life behind bars, probably. So, you know, we're going to have to help you find a way out. You, obviously, you could come and tell me about it. Or you could say, you know, you could just decide that when he says that, you can just go out and shake his hand and say, hey, you know, I still want to be your friend, you know, or something like that. It might kind of knock him off his balance a little bit. You know, but you'll have to give him some ideas to remedy this situation and deal with this. And that's where grace comes in. You can't just say, well, every time you hit, we're going to punish you like this. You're going to have to come in with grace and offer people help and support and encouragement to overcome. And I think that comes in many, many, many ways. And doesn't always happen after an incident. It happens when you connect with your students and build a relationship with them. Okay? Now, I might need a hand here. Yeah, maybe. I'll just grab one of these guys. Austin, you can help me here. There. Okay, just stand that up there. When you have it stood up, let go. Well, don't let it fall. Just stand it up there. Okay? This is one of your students, right? And you want them to be, you know, disciplined. You want them to be balanced. This is one of your students. So when you have them where you want them, let go. Okay. It's not going to work. So let's see. Maybe I'm getting this too hard for myself. Let's unlock some of these. Now, this is a piece of PVC pipe that I found on my father-in-law's farm, and he gave it to me. And he had only one piece of baling twine, so I went to the hardware store and they gave me a couple more pieces. So, which is really not my topic. But sometimes I think that we throw money around in school when we could just kind of be innovative. And sometimes we throw money around when we've run out of ideas, is what happens. So, okay. Now, we're going to take one of these hymn books. This will probably work. Okay, go ahead. Do it now. Okay, can you balance it now? It's a little tough. Basically, what we've done is we said, okay, now, Austin realizes that to control a student, he's going to have to do something a little more. So he tells him, every time you misbehave, I'm going to punish you. So now he has at least one point of attachment on this student, right? He has a point of contact to help modify this student's behavior, help discipline him, essentially. The problem is it's still a little bit hard to keep him where he wants him. Seems like if you tip it over to the side a little bit, it might almost work. No, it's too much. Still wants to tip over. So let's try two of them, huh? Can we do it like that? It seems like it's still not quite working. Let's try one more. This isn't totally a physics lesson. But okay, looks like we got it there now. Thanks a lot. You see why when they build radio towers or cellular towers and they put guy lines, guy wires on them, that they always have at least three. Because you can't make it stand up with less than three. Not very well, anyway. And I use this illustration at home to talk about discipline to our teachers. I don't think that you can manage a child in a classroom without at least 3 points of contact in their life. And if you have four or five, that's fine. We can add as many ropes to this thing as we want. We won't weaken the effect. So, okay, we already said one is definitely rules and punishment. That's right. That's one. There should be a rule. He understands, and he should understand the punishment if he breaks the rule. We're going to have something else. So we'll add an incentive, right? Some kind of incentive, an encouragement. It can be verbal. It can be something else. Hey, when all of you guys get to lesson 80, we'll go to the park. Or when everybody passes a math test together, I'm going to bring a big pizza. Or whatever it is. It depends on the course, on the ages of your students, what is a big motivation. But it's there for all of us. And pizza would still work for me today. I would do stuff for pizza. I would. So that provides another point of attachment to a student's life. And I think you need another one. I would immediately add communication with their parents. You know, that is huge. And I have worked out difficult problems in school by nothing more than talking to their parents about it. And sometimes I've thought, I'm stupid. If I would have talked to their parents about it a month ago, I probably wouldn't have had to drag this thing out this long. Now, hey, what if the child is an orphan? Or what if they really come from a totally dysfunctional home, and you can't work with the parents? What are you going to do? You're going to have to find something else, right? You're going to have to find something else. Well, you could do something different, like take them fishing or take them shopping or tell them you want them to come over and sew with you or any number of different things. And you would add a point of contact in their life that is going to influence them, and it will help you in your classroom. I don't think you can effectively manage most students without at least three. Now, maybe you say, well, you obviously don't have parents like the parents of some of my students. Well, I'll tell you about a parent in one of our of some children in one of our schools. He was critical, angry, usually drunk when I talked to him. He threatened to hurt the teachers. and actually did things like run into the schoolroom with a large stick. His main language was one that I didn't speak. He could not read. He had a lot of children in school because he had five women. And so at one point we guessed that he must be getting close to having half of the children in the school. Any of you have parents like that to deal with? And he was difficult and critical. What did we do? Well, actually, we talked to him and we listened to him. And we respected him. And he promised to help us all he could. And the result was that his children began to behave in school. It probably took about a year to work through the whole thing, maybe not quite that long. But we discovered something that we hadn't even anticipated, that he totally understood authority. And he totally understood our need to manage the classroom. And once we heard him out, and he knew that we listened to him when he talked, then he quieted down, and he could tell us what he was thinking, and we could communicate what we needed to him. And it changed everything. And it made a big difference, because he had a lot of children in school. Now, if we can do that with him, I challenge you to present to me a parent that can't help you with their child in school. And I know there's an exception to every rule, they say. But I challenge you to present me a case where good communication and listening and caring and communicating that to the parents doesn't make a difference. Okay. Just a few practical things. Plan ahead. One of my first experiences teaching in Belize, I think it was the second year, I had a student who just didn't seem to care about what happened. He would take his time to do stuff. He just didn't really seem to pay attention. We had a shop building we worked in that was probably 200 yards from the main classroom, and so the boys and I would walk down there. And I told the others, okay, we're going down the shop, and I probably told them another time or two. And we went, and I finally decided we're going to leave because he's not paying attention. And we went down there, and it was quite some time later before he finished packing his backpack and messing around, whatever he was doing. He finally made his way down there. In the meantime, I was pretty frustrated. I felt like this guy is just running the school. He's controlling the whole thing. I have to stop this. So I told him, you come with me. I'm going to punish you because this can't go on like this. So there was a little sapling. So I said, hold on to that. I broke me off a green stick. I said, I'm going to spank you. So I whopped him. When I whopped him, he kind of jumped forward and sat down. That made it a little harder to spank him in that position. So I waited. And then he got up. And then I whopped him again. And then he jumped and sat down. He's holding on to the sapling. So around we went. Me hit him. He jumps and sits down. And he's hopping around the sapling. And I'm following him around, swatting him every time he jumps up. It's in the middle of a situation like that that my mind almost divides, and I think, wow, this is almost surreal. You know, I just never thought I was going to be, you know, doing this. This is, how did I find myself here? I think it did need to be punished. I think I should put a little more forethought into how I went about it. I would have probably been a little better, a little easier. So plan ahead. You're going to have to discipline. What are you going to discipline for? What is the punishment going to be? How are you going to handle it? Where are you going to handle it? When are you going to communicate with the parents? Thank you. Remember, the goal of discipline is to end up with a child that disciplines himself. Be an example. Reach out and use all the resources you have available. You need multiple ways to impact his life. Use them all. Communicate. And remember, grace and truth. Grace and truth. Never pound them with the truth without offering grace. Thank you.